We're going to go to our mid-show punditry, Kevin. It's time for your rant, but we had a little bit of fun last week, and I wanted to keep it going because during one of the music breaks right at the end of the show last week, you had a really great idea, so we've decided we're going to stick this section. But just to remind people sort of where we were coming in with that, was that I'm going to play, we just had a short 40-second clip of sort of where we were sort of like live in the moment developing the idea. We'll replay that short clip just to give people a basis for where we were, and then I'll throw it to you right when we come back. So this is a very short 45-second clip from last week's show, and then we'll come back and continue that discussion.
See, I would say Joe Oliver is lying, but I think, in fact, his grasp of the facts is just so poor that he's spreading disinformation honestly.
Well, we have to ask where he's getting his information from, which is largely and demonstrably, you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to know that the people who give him his information as a public official is consultants, and the vast majority of those people are oil industry
executives. Oh, they're lobbyists, yeah.
And they're lobbyists. And so I think he can be passed off by simply the only information he has access to is the information that is people coming from people who have an invested interest.
Well, I got a real laugh when he accused the EU classifications as being unscientific, since he's rejected the advice of two prominent, since he clearly was rejecting the advice from James Hansen, who's a world-renowned expert on the topic.
All right, Kevin, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Nice. How are you going to top that, Kev?
Yeah, Joe, I love you. You're my favorite source of humor and satire. Well, the comment that actually that Darren was referring to that we came up during the music break was when I sort of ranted like I like to that we have a system, an electoral system that selects for the properties necessary to get elected. It doesn't select for the qualities necessary to do the job. Mm-hmm. So we end up selecting politicians. And to be fair, the Canadian public is rather apathetic when it comes to being informed on the issues. You know, we tend to have this intense spate of interest during a campaign, and we lap up all the media sound bites, and then, you know, in what can only be considered a really generally uninformed state of mind, we go and cast our votes. And so we end up with this class of professional politician like Stephen Harper, who's never had a job outside of politics. He's got a degree in economics. He's never been a practicing economist. He's been a political, you know, apparatchik his entire life, and now he has this ironclad grip on his own party. And so what we have is effectively a government of one. Like,
he does have one skill outside of politics. He has an excellent collection of sweaters.
Yeah, the old sweater gambit, that political chestnut. I would say there's a lot wrong with our existing state of politics, not of politics, but our electoral process. And the first is proportional representation. There was an op-ed piece in the Star a little while ago that had me pulling my hair out, and it was talking about, you know, the steady decline in voter turnout, and it was saying how this was an obvious call for more liberalized forms of voting, such as voting online. And I thought, well, you're daft. It's a sign that people don't give a damn about politics. Mm-hmm. It's already easy enough to vote. You don't have to make voting any easier, and expose it to, you know, putting voting online just exposes it to fraud and sort of being hacked. You know, anything online can be hacked. But the point is that Stephen Harper is currently enjoying a majority mandate with 40% of the vote, which means 60% of Canadians are not represented in government. So
I would argue that even fewer than that is represented in government. But anyway.
Well, I'm talking about people who actually turned out to vote. You know, considering that the voter turnout was only 50-something% last time out. You know, you've got this majority mandate with 40% of the population, which means, like I said, 60% of Canadians are not represented in government. And you're trying to look for a reason why there's falling voter turnout. You've got the majority of people with no representation in government, and you've got a system that says if you don't vote for the winning candidate, you don't get representation in government. And a first-past-the-post system is just woefully, woefully inadequate for a multi-party system. It makes sense in the States where two parties have a death grip on the electoral process. But most modern democracies are some form of proportional representation. It's just Canada, the US, and Britain that are, you know, still stuck in these old models.
I think, and I don't want to get too far into the voting aspect of it, only because what I'd love, there's actually Dave Meslin is someone in Toronto who's done a lot of work on something called the Fourth Wall. I'd actually like to get him into the show to talk about proportional voting. So maybe we'll stay away a little bit, just not get too far into that. What I really wanted to focus on from what you were saying was specifically this, just to hammer home the idea, and Kimberly, I think this is where you'll be able to jump in, is to make that relationship between what we're talking about with politics and what we're talking about with journalism. Mm-hmm. And what's happened to the newspapers and all the major media outlets is that you've got, very similar to contemporary journalists, you've got a whole class of people who are deferred to as authorities, mm-hmm. that really don't actually have any reason to be authorities. Mm-hmm. Stephen Harper is not a PhD in anything related to anything that he governs. I'm fairly certain that he has none at all. Mm-hmm. And now that doesn't mean that you have to have a PhD to govern. What it is that you have to understand that when Stephen Harper is saying something, he's, whether you agree with him or not, whether his facts are right or not, he is saying something that he has been given to say. Yeah. Maybe it went through some spin doctors. Maybe it went through some PR campaign people. But he's been handed this. Mm-hmm. He didn't sit down and devise all these policies. He's been handed these policies, and that either approves them or doesn't approve them or maybe fiddles with it. And the same thing that I think is, and this is where I'll leave it with you, Kimberly, is mm-hmm. the same thing is sort of what's happening with the media, which is why I'm so proud to be doing the Green Majority and mm-hmm. why I'm so happy that we're growing what we're doing, and we're going to hopefully have a lot more access to people by getting video and everything, is most of the journalists who write most of these articles, all the ones who have most of the contemporary journalists all over the world who have, say, physics experience and used to write science articles, they've all been fired. Mm-hmm. All the people that actually have experience in like training in politics as opposed to just covering politics, they've all been let go because they can't afford to pay those people for those specialities. Mm-hmm. So what we have is a whole bunch of people with journalism training and nothing else, which is great. That's fine. Except that we defer to them as authorities. So when they get a press release from a company or a statement from a politician, they don't have the time, energy, resources, or know-how to fact check it, to put it into context, to do any of that stuff. Yeah. And so they're left with, okay, I could either stay up for 48 hours straight researching this, or I could just copy paste and send it on its way.
I've worked in many newsrooms, and man, there's no time, there's no budget. You can't do that kind of research. You just can't. It really becomes a fancy way of reorganizing a press release and presenting it. That's what most news outlets do. There are some still very good news outlets that give enough of a budget to the investigation, to the research, but there's so few far in between, and they are getting, they're becoming dinosaurs. They really are. And that comes back to the public, because we want everything. We want our news to be fast food. We want people to look good, smell good, talk good. We don't care what's behind it, because we don't have time to invest either. Just like the journalists, we are living in this fast-paced society where we're multitasking, and we don't have time to go in depth into everything. So we just want quick sound bites that are powerful. What bleeds leads. You know, that was always our thing in the newsroom. And so, it's a phenomenon that I don't really know what the answer is, because it starts with every person who is too busy to look beyond the headline. And that's what the media is feeding off of. And then that's what politics is feeding off of, because, the media is going to feature the prettiest politician or the best, spoken politician. They don't really care about the content or the truth necessarily behind it.
Well, I think, and Kevin, I'll get your comment on this idea, whether or not you agree with me, but I think a lot of the idea when people say, well, this newspaper is a left-leaning newspaper, or this newspaper is a right-leaning newspaper, or whatever. A lot of the time, it's not that they've gone and done separate research. It's that they're usually taking it from the same press release and just put their own bias on it. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
Well, I think what's a fair assessment is that the consolidation of the media and fewer hands is squelching independent voices. And you've got, say something like the Toronto Star, which is just knee-jerk liberal. They're uncritically liberal. They've supported every liberal candidate that's ever come out. They always give some weighty analysis as to why they chose the liberal candidate, but it's always the liberal candidate. It's never anything but the liberal candidate. And they've had up on their website now for at least a month why we endorse Justin Trudeau as the liberal leader, liberal party leader. And, you've got this platform that people would like to think that journalism is fair, balanced, critical. And
I keep getting this wrong. Are you fair and I'm balanced, or am I fair and you're balanced?
I think I'm neither. Right.
Okay. I'll be both. It's fine.
Yeah. It's up to you. It's up to you to carry the flag. So I think there's a, I think we've, you know, we've seen, we've seen a tremendous consolidation of media in fewer and fewer hands, and I think that's led to a tremendous narrowing of editorial freedom and a narrowing of the political discourse. And we have papers like The Star that are openly politically biased. I mean, they're just, how can you vote liberal 100% of the time and not call yourself a liberal mouthpiece?
And what paper isn't unbiased now? Like, exactly, that used to be the first rule in journalism, unbiased reporting, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where that went out the window.
Well, I think it's because there's fewer, more and more outlets in fewer hands. Mm-hmm. I think that just the discourse is being narrowed and people are exerting, you know, who was it in the States? Was it Murdoch?
Rupert Murdoch is the part or majority owner or most active owner of Fox News.
You know, these people that own so many outlets that it's outrageous. Like, they own so many news media that it's outrageous that reporters don't want to offend them even when they're working at another paper because they might need them as a future employer. Like, it just sends, like, that kind of ownership just sends a chill really through.
Oh, absolutely. What I was going to say was that you just actually made a really unintentionally made a really good correlation to the quote-unquote AP scandal that was going on, where the U.S. government went and took records from Associated Press. And what's with all the commentators that I was listening to, the, of course, alternative media that I listen to from the U.S., things like the Young Turks and the David Pakman Show and other great American alternative media that are actually doing research and actually looking into these things, were saying was, yeah, okay, but the government's been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. You guys only started flipping out when they took your stuff.
Yeah.
But this isn't the first time. You're acting like this is the first time they've ever done this. It's not true. This happens all the time. And I think that's one of the cases there, was they're just like going about blindly sort of, you know, here's the press releases we got today. Okay, let's rewrite this into news headlines. And then people take it as fact. And then politicians come on to comment and people take them as authorities. And neither the journalists nor the politicians they have are any of them are authorities. And if your starting piece of information is a press release by the company, you've got a PR campaign that's now voiced by two people being presented as independent authorities, both of which are neither of which are actually independent authorities. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why everyone's so misinformed. And again, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. It doesn't need to be a global takeover of, you know, a bunch of men or women sitting and smoking cigars in a dark room. It's just the way the system is set up, and just being aware of how the system is, and that when you read a newspaper, it doesn't mean it's a fact. It might have facts in it, but everything in it isn't necessarily a fact, I think, is where we get there.
Yeah, well, just to tie it to something concrete, I've mentioned it on the show twice now that we're approaching a tipping point in climate change with regards to thawing permafrost, and the basic reality is that, so already the planet has warmed about 0.8 degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times. And if we turned off all anthropogenic emissions tomorrow, the planet would continue to warm by at least another degree by the end of the century, bringing us to a grand total of 1.8 degrees Celsius. That's if we turned everything off tomorrow, and remembering that our target is 2 degrees Celsius. And recently from Oxford University, from the Earth Sciences Department, Dr. Anton Vax has calculated that the tipping point for permafrost thawing is 1.5 degrees Celsius. Which means even if we shut everything off tomorrow, we're going to pass the tipping point of permafrost, of thawing permafrost, which will in fact release gigatons of methane into the atmosphere in an unstoppable process that will so thoroughly dwarf human emissions that shutting off everything, once that process starts, if we were to shut off everything, if we were to go, holy crap, you know, we've unleashed, you know, gigatons of methane from the permafrost, let's shut everything off, it won't matter anymore because there's just so much methane there, it's just not even, it dwarfs our own contribution. And I've been on a letter writing campaign, like, it keeps me up at night, and I can't get anyone to take this story seriously. I'm even getting responses from people that are, you know, thanking me for my input, and I'm like, how can this not be the single biggest news story going? We're committed to passing an irreversible climate change tipping point that will probably reduce humanity to being hunter-gatherers struggling for survival at the poles. Like, we're headed for an obvious, you know, scientifically verifiable disaster.
Well, and then what happens though, Kevin, is that because, like, you're saying that, and then every other outlet isn't mentioning it, or if they're mentioning it, they're like, well, some scientists think this might be a problem, and mumble, mumble, mumble.
you're an extremist. You're the outlier. Therefore, you must be crazy.
Exactly. That's really the impression
news,
I'm getting.
If it were really news, it would be on the news. And that's most people's attitudes.
You know, from a media standpoint, though, there's a very logical reason. It's ridiculous. But the fact is, the environment does not have a face and its own personal story.
Right.
That's what media loves. And that's where maybe we're falling down as activists, is we need to find the more personal stories, the more, you know, bringing it back to the people, the animals we can identify with. I mean, that has to just happen over and over again. Otherwise, people hear these stats. I mean, I heard these stats last week on your show, and it froze my heart. I mean, they're horrific. However, you know, in the jumble of stuff going on, those numbers just, they don't mean anything to people, right? And you need to put a face, you need to put stories, you need to outline how does your life change, you know?
Right.
And that's, I think that's maybe where we're falling down, is we need to paint more of a picture, a more horrifying picture for people, you know?
Well, I think, and I'm actually sort of, I think we're really getting somewhere with this topic. I'm going to live sort of put you on the spot and be ask if maybe, because it's not as time sensitive, maybe we can come back another time to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Sure.
I'd love to keep going with this.
Absolutely.
The other reason I wanted to do that as well is that because we're sort of getting towards the end of the show here, I do have a couple of announcements
absolutely.
I need to make. So I'm just going to break quickly for those announcements, and then let's come back to this topic, because it is very much related to all of what we're talking about. Is this is why we're trying to do the Green Majority. This is exactly what we're doing. As a reminder, neither Kevin nor I, you can correct me if I'm wrong, have ever received a paycheck for doing this.
Oh, crap, no.
I don't think I've even ever taken you out for a beer, but that's because it would come out from my pocket. I don't have any money either. I worked as a server, okay? So that's part of what we're doing to launch this is we want to start doing an actual TV show. One of the, you know, you were saying that people get selected to be on this because they're, you know, the beautiful politician or they're or the news anchor with the nice blonde hair or something like that. It is a complete coincidence that both Kevin and I are dashing young men.
Oh, yeah.
We will, of course, be doing have cameras soon. So you can stop laughing. Don't laugh too hard, Kevin. People will wonder which one of us you're laughing about.
Yeah, I got a face for radio. Let me tell you.
So Kevin may or may not be on the TV show. I will, however, though. of his own volition, of course. I would never prevent him from coming on. But this is really what we're getting at, is that there is no cash incentive for us to do this. We, Kevin and I, both do this because we're really interested and it's important. And we're both pulling our hair out, screaming, being like, it's like, I forget what the thing is from, but it's like, Jim Carrey's line. It's like, I feel like, oh, it's from Zoolander. Will Ferrell's line. He's like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. How does nobody notice? He only has one look.
Yeah. that's so
like
true.
That's both Kevin and I here every week, being like, I can't believe nobody else is talking about this. So I guess we have to. And